Okay, good evening, everyone. We're going to do a call to order here at 7:16 p.m. Sorry, I guess it's not yet. 7:16 p.m. Public hearing of the 2014 tax levy will now come to order. Roll call, Mrs. Stecker, please.
Mr. Olive?
Here.
Mrs. Wilkinson?
Here.
Mr. Alger?
Here.
Mr. Escalante?
Here.
Mrs. Wilkinson? Mrs.
Johnson?
Here.
Mr. Kendrick?
Here. Okay, on November 10, 2014, the Board of Education of Glen Ellyn District 41 adopted a Truth in Taxation Act resolution for the 2014 tax levy. Notice of the December 8, 2014 Truth in Taxation hearing was advertised on November 27, 2014 in the Glen Ellyn News, the Press, and the Lombard Spectator, newspapers of general circulation in DuPage County covering the communities of Glen Ellyn, Wheaton, Carroll Stream, Lombard, and Glendale Heights. And the tentative levy was placed on display. The board will take action on the 2014 tax levy during its regular scheduled meeting, which follows this hearing. To date, the district has not received any public comment around the levy. Is there anyone present who would like to provide comment on the proposed levy? Anyone? No? Sure?
John, the point of clarification, you mentioned November, it's December.
Pardon me?
You mentioned November, it's December.
The hearing was advertised on November 27th.
Oh, okay.
And on November 10th, the Board of Education adopted it, a Truth in Tax resolution. Okay. So hearing none, the public hearing is now closed, and we will start our meeting at 7:30 as usual. Thank you, everyone. Okay, good evening, everyone. Welcome. To the December 8th, 2014 Board of Education meeting. Call to order. Please rise, face the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. Thank you. Roll call, please, Mrs. Stecker.
Mrs. Wilkinson?
Here.
Mr. Alger?
Here.
Mr. Boshansky?
Here.
Mrs. Nelson?
Here.
Mr. Ellis?
Here.
Mr. Escalante?
Here.
Mr.
Kramer? Here. Okay, public participation. I'd like to remind members of the audience that speakers should identify themselves, complete a public participation form, and limit your comments to 3 minutes or less. If your comments has substantially been reflected in others, we would ask, in the interest of time, that you please forego making them and that you provide the board with any copies of written material you may have. Personal complaints and criticisms about staff members, students, or other members of the District 41 community should be initiated privately with the appropriate district representative. Also, profanity, interruption, and other interference with the orderly conduct of the meeting are not permitted. All questions raised will be forwarded to the appropriate District 41 staff representative for a response, if a response is warranted. I'd like to remind everybody, in our last meeting, we probably stepped away from our protocol around using people's names, so let's please be respectful of staff in our comments. Is there anyone present that would like to address the board at this time?
Jeff Cooper.
Mr. Cooper.
Jeff Cooper, Morella. Those pesky rules, 3 minute limit. Don't name anyone. Talk to your supervisor. How about don't walk out of a public restaurant without paying for your food? It's a simple rule. My friend at the IRS called it taxable income. It is worth it. It's your move. I suggest an apology and reimbursement. I still do. Is your Joe Moore a tax attorney? Do the right thing. I think it's offensive to have someone serving on a public board that would think nothing of taking advantage of taxpayers, which you apparently have. This topic isn't going away until you make it right.
I'd like to make a request that we go by our policy to not discuss personal names
and
until that's made in the public comment time. John, could you address that for me, please?
Yeah, please don't use anyone's names in your comments.
The next time that she stops going ahead and spending public money for her eating habits, I'll have no problem with her being on the board until she makes retribution, or until she makes reimbursement, I have an issue with that. And I have an issue with her sitting up there.
Okay.
And I have an issue with being interrupted. You have 3-4 weeks to go ahead and contact me. But now you're going to take up my time.
Okay, let's move on,
okay,
please.
Thank you. I'd like to moving on. Dr. Gordon, I know you moved here just last year. Just like Colorado has a state constitution, so does Illinois. One of the most important points to me is the following. Article 8, Section 1, Subsection A. It states, any funds, property, or credit shall be used only for public purposes. It's really simple. Since I started coming here a number of years ago, I consistently find instances of public funds and credit being used on things that serve no public purpose. A recent example, the trio of PBL trainers from Colorado. We not only paid them a fine hourly rate, but we flew them here a total of 8 round-trip fares, a total of 28 hotel room nights over the 3 trips, 3 rental cars, gas on each trip, parking for their car at the airport, Denver Airport 3 times, lunches and dinners on every trip. The meals, at the least, serve no public purpose. But the highlight of this would be the $136.16 tab at Maud's at 500 West Randolph in Chicago. They got in their District 41 taxpayer-paid-for car with the District 41 taxpayer-paid-for gas inside and went touring Chicago and eating on our dime. No matter how you spin it, no public purpose was served here. None. Same as in August when your $130,000-plus Ben Franklin principal spent $52.46 at Sam's Club for food for a staff meeting. $9 million, but no public purpose. This needs to stop. To the board, I can only do so much in unearthing these matters as an advocate for the stakeholders. We need your help.
That's it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cooper. Anyone else?
Kevin Rath.
Mr. Rath.
These were comments that Jennifer has had written. She's not feeling very well, and I'm not going to get it but I'm going to help you too, so I actually don't on November 29th, I had the opportunity to attend a coffee with Mrs. Nelson and Mr. Escalante. On December 3rd, I had the opportunity to listen to Dr. Gordon at a town hall meeting. Both were interesting discussions, and I appreciate the extra time that people took to participate in these meetings. My questions and comments stem from these meetings and the previous 2 board meetings. Dr. Gordon stated that the full-day kindergarten survey given to parents, teachers, and community members this fall was, quote, very informal. When can we expect a more formal survey? Why would the board continue to consider full-day kindergarten in an early learning center if a more thoughtful, detailed survey weren't offered to the public? For example, are parents willing to pay tuition for full-day kindergarten? Are they willing to bus their young child? Is the administration planning on a more detailed survey? If not, why not? Stemming off of that, at a town hall meeting, Mrs. Carlson stated that when offered the choice of full-day kindergarten and half-day kindergarten, about 80% of the parents opted for full-day. I would like to know where this statistic comes from. I have looked at the stats, and they are more along the lines of 50% of the families opting for full-day and 50% opting for half. I think this is important to know for our demographic before moving forward. Full-day kindergarten has been on the table since 2012. Why weren't facilities looked at more closely for full-day before phase one of construction broke ground? Since space is an issue, as it is at most schools, why aren't discussions being had as to the effectiveness of the dual language program at Churchill? We aren't mandated by the state to do dual language. As you know, it is an expensive program. Has the board had those hard discussions about choosing one, full-day kindergarten or dual language? Which would better meet the needs of our learners given our space constrictions? Is adding on to our buildings to house these programs a want or a need? Changing the subject of multi-age, I am going to restate my question from last week. How do you plan to measure the think tank success with multi-age, both academically and socio-emotionally? Socio-emotionally, Dr. Gordon stated at the town hall meeting that he was using the, quote, positive community survey results as an indicator that our children were doing fine socially and emotionally in school with multi-age. I was, in fact, shocked as to how the community survey results could be interpreted as positive. Parents, teachers, and community members at large were overall not buying into the multi-age model. In fact, only administration was. There needs to be a stronger measure than the survey or discussions with administrators. Academically, I am shocked that there is no hard data other than, quote, scores are going up to prove think tank success. While I understand the need to compare cohorts of children with fixed income limitation, we need to also compare year to year. If using the RIT expected growth targets as indicators, please show me the numbers of children who met or exceeded their growth targets year by year and grade by grade. Show me how they directly correlate to the think tank plan and not by other factors. If you need 3 years to evaluate this plan, then why, as Mr. Buckles asked, would you think of extending multi-age again?
Okay, please wrap up, please.
There's four more points, and I can turn this in and separate from the copies. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
And Mr. Rath also told me we have Jennifer's letter, too, because she emailed
that. That is a part of this as well.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else?
Bruce Curry.
Thank you for listening. I just wanted to reiterate and ask the board if we're ready to implement second and third grade, I guess it'd be called level two, combining second and third grade together. As a teacher, I think that a lot of the modules don't fit together, and you would be teaching out of order in second grade what third graders should be learning, and third graders what second graders maybe didn't learn. So I think that's a big difficulty from a curriculum perspective. My next question is, has level 4 or 5 or level 3, I mean, fourth and fifth grade together, been effective? I'd like to see a restudy of that or some indicator to see if it has or has not been effective, and see whether the public at large is satisfied with these changes or if they're not satisfied with these changes before we go experimenting on the youngest of our children, children who are in second and third grade, children who are 6, 7, 8, and maybe 9 years old. I mean, last week, last time we were here, a woman, she sort of felt like, you know, I don't have it. My kid's going to go into fifth grade. She's in fourth grade right now. So she is in, and I can't say I'm in love with Think Tank, with having fourth and fifth grade involved. But she's there. We're long-term members of the Glen Ellyn community. And that's what we, you know, that's what you guys have signed us on to. I know this is a long, drawn-out thing, but I want to see whether it's being effective before we start implementing it for our littlest of children, our second and third graders. One of my biggest complaints about Think Tank is that I feel that when you have a math teacher and or a STEAM teacher and a literacy teacher, ELA teacher, together, the responsibility for one particular child is diluted, that I don't think you have when you have one teacher in the classroom getting to know that child and not having and having, you know, 20 to 30 children to take care of instead of 60 to 70 children to look after. So I would respectfully ask the board to consider and think very hard before implementing the second and third grade model or level two.
Thank you.
Hi, good evening. I have three main items to touch on. It fell up to the November 10th meeting and the data that was presented on the lower grades versus the data that was presented on September 22nd for upper grades. A couple things. Why are they not presented together at the same meeting? And why were they broken out? D41 in the K-6 district seems reasonable. You would present the data at the same point in time, and then the follow-up presentation at each touch point would be at the same date and time. Why was the data on the 10th presented in a different format compared to the data on the 22nd of September? You presented average RIT scores and the NWEA average for the K-3 and the percentage of students that met their own growth target. However, going back to the presentation, which is all I had to go on, 4 through 8, you presented MAP scores based on percentage of students that fell in the MET expectation. I realize I'm not an educator, but it's really hard for me to draw a conclusion on how we're doing if the standard of data we're looking at varies across different age categories. Again, based on the presentation, because that's all I have to go on, the Fontes and Pinnell that is at or above D41 expectations for spring of 2014 was 26% for kindergarten, 22% for first grade, and 17% for second grade. I'm concerned by this. I don't know if you are, in fact, concerned by this, considering fourth grade and beyond is well above 50%. At 68%, 78%, 72%, 62%, 67%, and 62%, respectively. What's missing? Why is that K through 2 so much lower? And what's being impacted? Have what we changed actually worked? My second point is multi-age. So how can we move forward with additional multi-age when we don't even know if it's successful for several years based on the 4-5 model? And why does it continue to be stated that it's a board decision? Shouldn't it be the superintendent gathering information and reporting out to the board to make a further decision, since the board is not necessarily educational experts? Even Common Core breaks up elementary from K through 2, where we get our 2-3 platform. Schaumburg 54, District 54, which was used in the pitch of think tank as the best in class, even has kids in bands of 1-2 and then 3-4. So academically and social emotional isn't that better aligned. We've added PBLs in the last year. We'll be adding PERC assessment later this year, which is an online platform and based on the November 10th meeting. It's not going to come without challenges both for the teachers and the students. And now we're going to add multi-age. I just ask that you take some time. Again, to Bruce's point, these are our youngest learners, and I have one of them and have future coming. So just be thoughtful.
Thank you.
Stephanie Clark.
Ms. Clark?
Hi. Just a couple points. First, I attended the town hall meeting last week, and I just wanted to thank Dr. Gordon and his staff for answering questions. I thought it was a good event. I know I already emailed the board about this, but I would encourage more board members to attend. I was personally disappointed that only Mr. Bochensky and Mr. Ellis were there. I know that there's reasons that everyone can't be there, but seeing that the desire for more informal public feedback was one of the reasons given for eliminating public participation and these meetings, I feel it would be appropriate for more board members to attend those events in the future. And I'm not saying that the town hall meetings was a replacement for public participation. I just know that was one of the reasons given. One thing I wanted to mention, that when we were discussing full day kindergarten at the town hall meeting, Dr. Gordon said it was probably at least 3 years away from a phase two, based on once you go to referendum and can move forward with construction. And based on that fact, and this is going to go to referendum, and this won't happen until at least the fall of next year, I'm assuming, and it will be two referendums, I'm going to ask the board that you consider continuing moving forward, gathering information, but leave a decision until the new board is in place this spring, because they will be the ones that will actually have to implement and try to get two referendums passed. On the agenda tonight is class size targets. I just kind of wanted to ask, are the class size targets more of a guideline, or do we really follow it? Because one example that I have is at Lincoln, there's two empty classrooms, or I shouldn't say empty classrooms, they're not empty right now, but they're not being used as classrooms, but they could be used as classrooms for full day kindergarten. However, we actually reduced our fourth grade class at Lincoln from 5 sections last year to 4 this year. And they have a couple of classes there. One has 30 kids, one has 28, which are both above our guidelines. So I guess I'm wondering what is driving those decisions, because we did appear to have a space, but yet we're above the guideline of 27. Same thing for first grade. We have, I think, 3 out of our 4 classes in first grade are above the recommended guidelines. I'm going to follow up with Dr. Gordon and Karen Carlson on this, but this is my rudimentary. Just to kind of follow up on some of the points that were made about multi-age, of all the things that we're doing, PBL. In my mind, I don't need to look at cohorts, but I think we need to put together some data for the district to look at. Kind of look at growth by all of our cohorts and by what grade level they're in. And if you take each one of these lines, each one of these is a class, like class of 2019, class of 2020, class of 2018, and what was their growth every year by grade? And also maybe put on this chart, when did we implement major things, like when was everyday math implemented? When was specialization implemented? When were PBLs implemented? Just to maybe get an idea. I would assume cohorts, maybe their scores could be different, but I think we would hope overall the growth would be similar year to year. K-1 growth, 2-3. So
okay.
I'll follow up with you on it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good.
Thank you.
Anyone else?
I'd like to make a comment. Is this an appropriate time?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. This is regarding comments from the public during the comment time at the previous meeting as well as tonight. There have been references made about my expenses while working as a full-time administrator at College of DuPage. If you would familiarize yourselves with the College of DuPage Board of Trustees policies that are available publicly, you will see that there are limits provided for expenses by administrators. My expenses were well within those limits. I'd further like to say that if there are concerns about the policies of the College of DuPage, those concerns need to be brought to that Board of Trustees. It seems to me that you perhaps are confusing an employee following the policy with a policy that you don't agree with. Thank you.
Okay. Presentation reports and initiative updates. The FQC construction update.
This is probably pretty obvious. I'm about 50 pounds heavier than the guy. I just want to reintroduce myself. My name's John.
Are we at that phase of the construction now? I need the bigger guy to move the stuff.
Move in and see close to moving. I'm here just to give you an update. Jack apologizes. He had probably a more difficult meeting than this one will be. With regards to construction, what's going on? We have four projects that are currently out of wait, ongoing for you, so we'll just work our way right through them. Franklin and Lincoln Schools, both four classroom additions, will be substantially complete at the end of next week. We have inspections from the Regional Office of Education scheduled for the 15th, so we can do our preliminary inspections, make sure that all of our life safety items are up to speed and the buildings are done, so we can turn them over to Dave Scarmardo and the people from facilities so they can get them ready for move-in and set up the classrooms over the holiday break. There will be, by schedule, some site work that remains until the spring and summer of next year. And those things are, as they were scheduled, in particular at Franklin, the removal of those existing portable classrooms and then the extension of the asphalt play surface. That was all originally scheduled to happen in the summer of 2015, and that's when it will happen. So those things are moving along on schedule. At Churchill and at Forest Glen, we're taking advantage of this break in the weather we've had in the last 2 weeks, and in both places are working on foundations and structure for the classroom additions that will come online next August. At Churchill, they're working on the concrete foundations. And then at Forest Glen, we're actually ahead of the game. The foundations are in place, and they're putting the masonry bearing up right now. So those, we had already always anticipated there was going to be a loss of productivity this winter, so any time that we actually get things accomplished between now and about the end of February is a bonus for us, and we're going to take advantage of all the time we have for that. So we continue to have real good communication between ourselves, Ron and Chris at FGM, the principals, Bob and Dave, and are working our way right through it. So be happy to answer any questions if there's anything that you have questions about.
I just have a question.
Sure.
Of course, Glenn. Mm-hmm. I know it's right there, and I haven't been lying, but masonry, how far up are you on the walls?
Well, they have the, on the north pod, they're all the way up, and then on the south pod, they're working from the east to the west, and they have the corridor wall up, and they're taking it all the way up, and then they have a portion of the south wall up to bearing, and they're working their way west.
So masons have roughly 2 weeks left?
At the most.
And then the steel is already
available and ready to go.
Okay. So the goal is to get the steel on.
Put the steel on, put the roof on. Or put the roof steel on.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
And you think, oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
You think we're going to make then next week, and we get the occupancy permits and all that done by the end of next week so that the teachers can move it all around in between?
Yeah.
That's phenomenal.
So that's what's scheduled. When you go by there, you'll see that the site concrete's in place, the egress, emergency egress is in place. We won't get landscape restoration done this winter. We'll get it graded so that it stays dry and clean on the hard surfaces, but the landscaping will come in the spring.
This maybe is a tie-in to Dan's. Is the occupancy inspection from the Regional Office of Education different in any way from what the village requires? Or?
So the way that schools are permitted is the ROE is ultimately the grantor of occupancy, and so they will come and do a life safety inspection, and then they'll defer to the fire department for the fire department components of it. So they're actually the inspecting body for your buildings.
Terrific. Any other questions?
Can we, I don't know, I mean, you guys did a lot of work, and we're done with portables at Franklin, so, and Lincoln. On that half-day sit day, can we have an hour, 90-minute open house to allow those parents to walk through that?
We've started having conversations about what does that look like. So we'll continue that conversation because I think it's a good idea to have some type of open house out there. We'll definitely look at that. See if it's.
We got a half day on next Friday. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So next Friday is going to be. You guys are going to be waxing floors and moving in and stuff.
Yeah, well, we'd have to do it when we came back. Probably.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We'll want to give. There's your staff way, has a fair amount of work to do to set up once we're gone, once we're done.
Yeah, because the teachers can go in and set them up, make them look like classrooms then. And then.
We'll definitely do some type of celebration.
House. Some open house, right?
Yeah.
Maybe after the first of the year.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
anything else? Any other questions?
When do you think the Forest Glen will have the roof?
So Forest Glen will most likely not be under roof until the beginning of March.
Okay.
The reason that is because we'll have the roof structure in place, but there's some temperature restrictions on installing that kind of roof. And so it's unlikely we'll have the kind of weather we need unless something is dramatically different to install.
Okay. Any other questions?
John, that's probably the best update we've had all year. You know, tell it, make sure you let Jack know. Yeah. No, so are we. So let Jack know. Thank you so much for stepping up.
Thank you. All right, discussion items, board policy revisions, Paul, Dean, and Kathy. First readings, second readings, and adoption.
Let's you start.
So we had a meeting last Thursday.
Correct.
I think that was the last time that we had another policy committee meeting. And we're having them more regularly now. We've scheduled them out all the way through the end of June because we're going to start to, in January, we'll start to look at policies in the 600 range. So what we did last Thursday was basically go through all the press recommendations from the last couple of releases that gets us up, I think, more into October. We're through October on the press releases. Yep. So we're really current now on press. Those recommendations are all in your packet. Pretty much without exception, we have accepted the press recommendations for the changes to them. A lot of it has to do with things in footnotes and some changes in state law. The other new one that came in is in the Policy 900 area. Mm-hmm. And in Policy 900, that's where we talked about use of personal devices. Mm-hmm. The student part of that we've already done and adopted, so that's in place. This is the part where we said we're going to come back to talk about the teacher portion of it. So we have that part in there for the first reading tonight. So you'll all need to go in there and read what we did around 900. And I think that pretty well updates what we did.
The old 900 just moved to 910. So it's a 900 series. And 910 was the student use of personal technology that Dean referenced.
And there were no changes in that.
No changes.
No changes.
Nothing was done to that other than a new numbering system.
Yeah.
Catherine, anything you want to add?
Yeah, let me just add
please.
One thing. Most of the work that we did on the 900, the new work, was actually put together by Paul and staff, and the effort was to streamline it. Mm-hmm. It was, I think, beyond 20 pages or less. Mm-hmm. We started looking at it last summer, and we really thought that was
difficult for people to interpret. So
yeah.
Try to capture all the essential points in a much more concise version. And I think they did a great job, obviously.
Thank you.
Anyway, that's up for questioning after the first reading.
Board members?
I have one comment just on the comment brought up the last time we were talking about this. In email communication and social media, it's 9:30. I just want to let you know that you covered my concerns with the links that just the monitoring it and all that.
So
there's a lot in here.
There is.
I was trying to figure if you missed anything. I couldn't come up with anything, but I appreciate you taking a look at that.
Yeah. Thank you. And we try to capture that.
I would say, you know, on that, that was one of my questions on that. I had, it were two things. One is under policy 6, under instruction 6340, student testing and assessment. And I know that we've included language around our park assessment.
Mm-hmm.
Number 4 reads, utilizes professional testing practices. That seems vague to me, and I'm assuming it has to do with the use of technology with the park assessment and the formatting of it.
A lot of them. Yeah, you know, anytime that there's state or federal testing, there's tons of guidelines that we have to follow with park, like one of them. One of the nuances is that you can't have instructional material up on the walls. So we have to follow those guidelines. So Karen knows those really well and spends time doing webinars on PARC and other exciting assessment guidelines. So it's a lot of those nuances that we have to make sure that we address.
Okay. So the practice piece is really like what the room must look like,
yep.
What the rules are associated with that, what's
how many room kids, the technology, but you're right on the technology as well.
Okay.
And they in PARC speaks to that. What do we have to have for the technology to be used on that assessment?
Okay. And then the other one, and I brought this up at the last meeting, and it was around our bullying and the 720, which is the harassment of students prohibited, which is that kind of aligned with the other one. I had a question about the listing that we do, and you know, thank you for going back and checking on that. And I understand what the purpose is behind it in terms of having an iterated list. I just wanted to make sure that we're not going to miss something. And then I would go to the bottom of that on 720 of the students that where we identify terms. Again, I go back to the work that the parent committee and teacher committee did on our bullying behavior continuum. So it aligns with that, but it's something that you added in terms of defining terms, intimidating, hostile, offensive, that type of thing. And then again, we're listing some of that specifically. So I guess that's just always my concern that as we start to list, we miss something that we could. So as long as we're, you know, we're aligning with school code and, you know, what press is recommending, I'm good with that. I just don't like that before. Overstate. And then the last thing is, I think that we need to correct on page 2 of 3, the non-discrimination coordinator is our director of human resources, but we have title for that position. So we have our director of student services, which is one of the complaint managers.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Superintendent, but it says director of HR, which would be assistant superintendent.
Thank you for catching that.
So that should be updated.
Good catch.
Okay, anybody else?
Yeah, Paul, I've been directed, Catherine, and Dean. My questions are more toward execution. So, policy 445 is delinquent debt recovery. That's new, and we're going to participate in that.
On 440?
445.
The one that talks about the state.
Oh, yeah.
State
yeah.
Policy. I'm trying to find it right now.
This was recommended upon human review.
Yeah.
In this event that in the future we would want to try to participate in the state program, then this policy needs to be put in place. But we're not committing ourselves.
No, there's no commitment to it. It is just, it's there if we want to participate. Exactly what Catherine just said.
We're putting it in there just in case.
Yeah.
All right. And then operational services 4.100, the student insurance. We're offering the insurance, but we're not backing it. We're not guaranteeing it. And we're not.
No.
So why would we have something in our policy if we're not?
That we offer it to students. One, because we have to have an insurance piece out there that we offer to certain students.
All right. Thanks.
Yep.
Leave
it there.
And then my last one is with the back to the technology. I forgot what we said we're going to do if we don't have the signatures. And it's not in the
so if it's it, for the technology, I apologize, I went over here for a second. On the personal use technology piece or just signatures?
On the signature forms.
So
our policy, we state what it is, what they need to do, how it's going to be tracked, but not what happens if it's not received.
So what we've done with the personal technology piece is we've not gone back. We've asked principals to connect with the parents, and some of them have told us why they haven't, but we're connecting with those parents who haven't told us why they haven't signed up. So they just need to know that they can't have that technology on ground. So you basically said, my child will not have personal technology on the grounds.
So is that something that we want to put in a policy that non-signatory defaults
to no
technology?
We discussed that.
The language is in here. I was just looking for it, but I couldn't find that paragraph.
I know, but you have all the paper.
It is that you're in agreement with the policy.
Yeah, overall the technology? Yes.
The technology, or you use the technology, that is tantamount to signing.
And that's 950, is it?
And that's use of any district technology that Catherine's speaking about. Even if you don't sign it, and it's very similar to staff, you acknowledge you've read it, but you are still going to be held responsible for district technology policy overall, not the personal, not bringing the cell phone or that type of device, but overall technology that you're working off of, a Chromebook or something else, you're researching in school, you still need to follow our AUP.
Right.
Okay.
Part of the when we put together the policy, part of what we were trying to do was say the reason for the forum and the signing in the first place is to make sure that there's a conversation, or to try to enhance a conversation, and to make sure it's brought to light. So that we talked about the fact that even with the teachers, did we want to have letters for them to go over it all again? But they're already covered in so many other things about following all the policies we even feel is necessary. But the idea was to foster that conversation. If that conversation doesn't happen, if they don't sign the form, we're still going to implement our policy. It isn't like where if you don't sign the form, you need to do whatever you want.
Right. I was just unclear on where we could point to where, because policy is all well and good until it's broken, right? And then you got to point to a consequence
that's
defined by the policy.
Yep.
And if 950 is
the catch-all. 950 is the
catch-all. 950 is.
Which is exactly why we did it. So right. You're right.
Good.
Anyone else? Okay, terrific. Lori, class size targets. Oh, sorry.
Okay. Second reading.
We have some policies on second reading.
Yeah, you're going to adopt. Were there any questions on
that? Well, that was mine.
Okay.
So follow up on that one. Sorry,
so everybody's good with all policy, first and second reading?
Yep.
All right, good.
Class size targets.
The time of year when we're starting our budget for next year, and that has to do with the budget cycle, et cetera. But anyway, we usually bring up the last head start recommendation in January, but we start a little earlier this year so we can get a head start for next year. So the recommendation that you see before you is the same as the one that we had last year, which is level 1, level 2, level 3.
in terms of the targets, with the caveat that if a particular school has students who are performing below the district average, you're not making AYP for a number of years, so we have to lower targets at those grade levels. We do monitor class size targets on those enrollment reports, come out on a monthly basis, and then make decisions if the students or additional students that are needed. A lot of that has to do with the time of the school year, as well as staffing and
So, Lori, just a quick question about class size targets, and I apologize. We do need to go back and make an action item on the other piece.
Oh,
so you
okay.
may have said this while I was off on this other piece. Just around class size targets, what are those? What does it look like overall? Because we do, as Mrs. Clark said, you know, at times we do go above them. Sometimes we
right.
go below them.
Right.
So speak
a
to a little bit about...
Yeah, a lot of it has to do with the time of year. So, like, for example, the class size target is way above at this point because we have a lot of move-ins in November. Typically, we don't make a decision this time of year to split a class or to move kids with a new teacher. We would look at providing an assistant or something, some other support. We always check in with the principals when those class size targets go above. In fact, on a monthly basis, Dr. Gordon is familiar with this. I use a little red, yellow, green targeting to see where our class sizes are and which are above, which are below the targets in the target. You know, we wish that the kids came in nice, neat little packages from a staffing consideration. We really don't because the kids are better than that.
Mm-hmm.
We're a public school, so we allow all of our kids in as we should. So they don't always come in those nice, neat little bundles. And so oftentimes decisions have to be made. If you add a teacher here, does it mean you are bringing the class size then down to 16 or to 18? So.
Or splitting the kids.
Or splitting the kids. Some of it has to do with time. So
yeah.
We look at it very carefully.
Yeah.
Especially in August.
Have you,
so basically,
it happened a couple years ago, but have you ever had a teacher, like you've gone to say, look, you're at whatever, 29,
mm-hmm.
and we have an option of, you know,
right.
this space, whatever. Have you ever had a teacher say, I don't want to split the class, I'd rather accommodate this in a different way, we're in a good zone, we're in a, like, what voice does the teacher... as an arbiter of that have.
We have. I mean, that's not always the response, but we have had teachers say that to us in the past. John?
Yeah, so to reemphasize, you're saying they are targets.
Right.
You do a red, yellow, green report.
Right.
Sounds to me if I were looking at red, yellow, green, we're red and maybe level 3 at Ben Franklin and level 3 at Abraham Lincoln, and that's kind of where it's at. I mean, is everyone else is pretty much yellow or green? Is that the way I would look at
Actually,
it?
Actually, I think Lincoln is fine right now. I'm not sorry. We need to like talk with Clark later because the numbers that she shared don't match with the ones that are on the enrollment report.
Okay, the enrollment report shows 104, which would
right.
be 26 students, so you would have lopsided
right.
classes.
Right.
So it'd be interesting, though, to see the breakdown, sorry. Mm-hmm. It'd be interesting to see the breakdown. Mm-hmm. Maybe, if you don't mind, I'd like to see if you give me all that to me. I'd like to see.
Right, I can connect with the principal.
Right.
Yeah, I go off of the enrollment report.
Because, John, the fifth grade at Lincoln League, too. So I know that wasn't the concern, so I think that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm just looking at enrollment and just, you know, from a red, yellow, green perspective, it looked
right.
like to me we had two troubled areas, and I was trying to get an overall sense of it.
Right. So I'm showing in terms of areas who are above the targets. And again, I updated this November 24th. I haven't updated it since the enrollment report came in last Friday. It first grade at Lincoln, one above the targets. And then Franklin at second grade, we're 0.25 above the target. Fifth grade at Franklin, one above the target. Kindergarten and first grade at Churchill were above target. We've added assistance there using title money.
Mm-hmm.
And then Forest Glen, one above the target at grade one. So that does it.
Okay.
Yeah. I did have two questions as I was preparing for the coffee class a
sure.
couple weeks ago. I was going through some old facilities reports. I think it was back in 08 or 09. Where class sizes are mandated by a per square area, is that true of the state? I thought I read that.
Oh, from a size perspective?
Yeah.
I don't know the answer there.
Per square per student.
How many square feet
per student?
General guidelines,
right?
Yes.
Okay, and I'm assuming that's what you're kind of bubbling into this, or is this more a curricula-based, if I have more than 22 students in K-1, the administration feels the teaching level goes down?
Well, this is based on historically where we've had these targets. Over time, our lower grade levels have had fewer kids per student-to-teacher ratio. So we haven't looked at the actual space pieces of our classrooms. They're not all the same size.
Right.
So that would
be much
difficult.
Yeah. I guess from my recollection, it's not a mandate. It's a recommendation of square foot per children. So anytime we do new construction or we look to modify a classroom, those are the guidelines that they put their estimates together.
The other piece of this, and we've not talked about this year, but we have in the past, and that is there are other drivers, for deciding how to break sections down. So, and one of those is increased cost for teachers, staff, faculty, cost for salary benefits, all those other pieces. We have a budget in place, and so there's that fiduciary piece that we also have to look at too. So, your response in terms of let's deal with this within the system in the classroom is a way to try and address that. But that's a very real part of our budget if we're our budget established, so that's a piece of this as well.
We also try and look at it from an equity standpoint too. For example, if there's a class size that's bubbling over in one school, if we were to add a teacher to that school, they could bring it down below and so much out of proportion with the other schools at that particular grade level. So those are things we look at too.
So, and I'm asking this because we have a lot of long-term objectives with space and facilities and teaching, but when was the last time we kind of challenged ourselves to say 22 to 25 students per class is the best one? Why not 28 to 34? I know that's kind of big. But I enter
the... have some, unhappy, with, say, both parents and teachers.
Right.
From that perspective. But, long-term, the research on class sizes, it doesn't make that big of a difference until you get down to, I think it's... like 12 to 15.
It's pretty.
So below 15.
Yeah, I remember.
So.
And what's the number for above? There's a pretty high number for above, too, isn't there?
I don't know what the top number that would be.
I think that there is.
I just don't know that. Although you would never come close to that.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm not saying it, but we have a utensil or tool to say we can put more kids in classrooms to accommodate more space. We're going to get a lot of objections and a lot of, but we can have that conversation.
About the square footage?
About more students per classroom.
Yeah. I mean
we're having it now. I mean, that's every year we go through targets, and if we want to direct them to look at their targets.
I don't want them to look. I'm not asking her to do it now. I'm just saying as we talk about facilities and classrooms and kindergartens, it's like, okay, another, cube in the Rubik is what if we increase classes to 35? What's going to be the detriment to that? So just keep
that's
my
good.
Option.
Well, and I think Patrick, to your point, I think the board has always listened to the administration, and then, and this comes to Lori's point, from the teachers as well in terms of what they feel is the best fit. And when we look at our schools, we have such different building structures, so that a classroom in Ben Franklin is so very different than a classroom at Churchill, just in terms of the size, that you might be able to accommodate, a couple more children. But then also the makeup of that, we talk about this, it's always this kind of, I call it a Lego conversation. Well, we put this here and we put these, it's like an egg crate, and it's demographics, it's, so many characteristics. So, we've, as a board, looked for that, obviously, for that guidance, and but it is a question, and it has to do with dollars and numbers, but most importantly, what happens in that classroom? How do we make sure that the learning goes on the way it needs to go on?
Thank you.
So, Lori, what's the process here? Because usually we start this a little later. We're doing it a little earlier. Are you coming back to us for approval by when?
At the next meeting.
January.
Okay. Yeah. And does any board member need any additional questions answered? Because in theory, we will adopt these class size targets
For the following year only.
For the following year only.
Yeah.
So how much does this bind us? If we liked Patrick's idea and said we need some margin, we might need to maneuver with larger classes in kindergarten, would next week or next meeting be the time we should have a vote on that, or would that be a decision we could make next summer if things changed and we needed to raise them?
The board can always go back and have that conversation again. Where, you know, if something new comes to the board's attention, something financial or whatever, it may be construction or whatever, the board can go back and say, let's re-look at those. We would need to just hiring and that whole process,
yeah,
you know,
that
that's April. We really need to, that March timeline, we really need to know that information for the hiring process and for some of the riffing and everything else that goes along with it. It's pretty, they're big, big implications across the board, huge implications across the board.
I think the way we're set up, March would be a better time to let them know that than the summer.
Right. Okay.
Because we probably have contracts in place and hiring that we've done.
You will.
Decisions that have been made based on that, because this is what Bob uses to plan financially and understand what he needs, what Laura uses for her staffing, what Karen uses for curriculum.
And what principals use to hire.
Right.
Yeah.
Thanks, Lori.
Thank you. All right, so we're supposed
to go back.
Take some action item on the second readings and adoption?
Right.
Correct.
And what's the action item you'd like us to take here?
So adopting the second reading policies. Do we have
a list of those?
A motion for that? Do we have the list of them, or can we just go off of the second? Do we have a list of the second reading? Or can we just go off
they're
of?
In the table in the board report, but
we're okay with just saying, you know, the second reading as presented. Okay, so we just need a motion and then as presented the second readings.
Mm-hmm. Have a second? Or who has that motion?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Roll call.
Ms. Wachansky?
Yes.
Ms. Ellis?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mrs. Wilkinson?
Yes.
Mr.
Escalante?
Yes.
Mr.
Alger?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes, although I did forget to say there was a discussion. Anybody have a discussion?
We had a discussion before.
Just making sure, guys.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else? All right, great. Action items, consent agenda. Are there any items board members would like to remove from the consent agenda to be considered separately? Hearing none, may I have a motion to approve the consent agenda, which includes human resources, personnel report, employee recommendations, resignation and retirements, finance, facilities and operations, annual state of affairs, school district payment order November 19th through December 2nd of 2014, other matters, board meeting minutes of November 24th, 2014, public hearing and regular meeting.
Motion.
Second.
Roll call.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Wachansky?
Yes.
Mrs. Wilkinson?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes. Okay, superintendent's recommendation, supplemental pay recommendation. May I have a motion to approve the supplemental pay committee's recommendation to add the following activities in the fall of 2014, broadcast club for $600, Elementary Robotics Club at Lincoln for $1,200, Webmasters Club at Lincoln for $600, and Church Hill Movers Recess Running Club at Church Hill, hence the name, at $1,400.
Motion.
May I have a second?
Second.
Any quick summary, Erica? Is this you? Supplemental pay?
This is one of the committees I serve on, and I think we've talked about this. We've done our three-step process, and I know Joe asked some questions about numbers, which we've been doing for the last couple of years, is really looking at what we sunset and also making sure that it's you know, the right kind of activity for the kids. So.
Okay, terrific. Thank you. Roll call.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Wachansky?
Yes.
Mrs. Wilkinson?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes. Okay, resolution to adopt the 2014 tax levy. May I have a motion to approve the adoption of the 2014 certificate of tax levy and the tax levy resolution? The proposed levy represents a 3.31 increase over the previous year's total extension. The district actually expects to receive an increase of 2.45 under the Property Tax Limitation Act. The increase is based on a CPI increase of 1.5% and estimated new construction of $12.5 million.
Motion.
Second. Matt, second?
I said it. I think you guys talked over each other.
Any discussion?
Well, this is always a very, this is an understatement, but complex process. But I just wanted to give a little bit of view of this from last year to this year, and I pulled out the levy information from last year. And John spoke to this at one of our previous meetings on this, and it was the Finance Committee, you know, several years ago, actually, when John served on it, that began this process of working with Bob after he started to better adjust the levy, to better look at the levy in relationship to the budget as budget planning happened. Budget planning starts happening earlier. The levy discussion, had to happen earlier because we've got to do it by December. But in 2013, our levy was based on represented a 4.5% increase. This year, we're looking at a 3.31% request, and our CPI is much different. Last year it was 1.7, this year it's 1.5. New construction last year was 10 million. What did it come in at, Bob?
8.8,
so it was lower. And then this year we're looking at 12.5, but we're not quite sure we're going to hit that. So again, this is that needing to figure out at this point. So I just want to juxtapose where we were last year, and that each year we, as a board, have directed superintendent and then ultimately to assistant superintendent to be as tight as possible in terms of this without shackling future boards in terms of the levy process. So I thought it was good for me to do a side-by-side on this and kind of see where we are and where, we're at or below just based on the numbers. So it's a good thing.
Terrific. Thank you for that. Just to clarify, Bob, at the 12.5, I think we already know we're over that.
Well, we don't know. The assessors have said use $15 million as an estimate. And I just got that in within the past 2 weeks after we had already brought the original recommendation. Okay.
So I think we are going to hit that, Erica, just so you know. Any other comments? Drew, any quick summary on the levy? For?
I don't think you talked about it.
My point of view, I think, you guys know I don't always support the levy. I think this year I am, predominantly because we've added some new debt that I think is going to take, that we want to put in the operational fund. So I think because of that, we're going to need a levy. I think also the salary increases from the contract justify that, foreign language, and how we're growing that program, and our reserve fund balances being lower than the percentage or whatever. So I do feel that this is necessary for us to achieve our goals. So that's my summary.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
All right. Roll call.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Bochensky?
Yes.
Mrs. Wilkinson?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Kendler?
Yes. Okay, Memorandum of Understanding, Professional Development Plans and Remediation Plans. May I have a motion to approve the Memorandum of Understanding between the Board of Education and the Glen Ellyn Education Association for the Professional Development Plans and Remediation Plans?
Motion.
May I have a second?
Second.
Discussion. Any quick summary? Anybody? Good?
So, I have just a quick question. I know we talked about this, I think, two or three board meetings ago, and that Representative Chapalavia, Linda Chapalavia, had put a bill in the legislature, and correct me, Lori, I know you watched this and Karen closely too, about this new, this is again based on PARA, just for transparency of our conversation. This is the plan that was adopted by the state legislature to do teacher evaluation differently than we had been doing it, so it's this quadrant approach. And so I guess I'm wondering, I don't even know how to ask this question, but I'm wondering if our MOU,
make sure that there's it's aligned with what this new law is, which is the ability for a teacher to have a second, I'm going to call it a second opportunity, if they're at needs improvement or unsatisfactory, based on what Chef Olivia put in.
I don't know the answer to that, Eric. Believe so. We run this past legal counsel.
Okay. Well, then they would know about that.
But I can take another look moving forward. And I would imagine if that's the case, we would then, draft another MOU or make a revision.
There's no reason not to do anything with it tonight. And even via counsel, Renee, I would think.
Right. And I would also. I would worry about us making a change now, knowing that it's just proposed legislation, approved legislation.
Right. I actually think it went through, but I think the way I read the MOU, there's the way that Gia has worked with you to list this. It allows for this their professional development plan with the needs improvement rating to have that 45 days and to be able to. To build that in. So I think it's okay. I know that came up, as an alert in terms of the law. So I want to make sure that, we look at that or we have that in here. But like you said, there's no reason not to move forward on this.
Because you think it may create a conflict with what we have?
I don't think so. I just want to be aware that there's an opportunity potentially for a teacher who has missed, who has been needs improvement unsatisfactory, is given more time to raise that and be on a PDP longer, so that whether or not this covers that, we just need to make sure that it's aligned. So, but if this has been run by council, then they would know that. So, I think it's fine.
No, I'm very comfortable with it, where we're at, the conversations we have with the 45 days. It really was trying to work with our association, our teachers' association, to really ensure that everybody's on the same, has the same understanding of what this means, when does it go, how is it impacted, and how are people evaluated as we move forward, as they are successful, or maybe at times not successful. What does that look like? And we really needed some real clear language on where we were going and those steps moving forward under PARA, because it is a game-changing legislation. So as we move forward, we're really comfortable with this MOU. Roll call.
Wilkinson? Yes.
Yes.
Mr.
Ellis?
Yes.
Mr.
Escalante?
Yes.
Mr.
Elgin?
Yes.
Yes. Superintendent's reports.
First off, last week, somebody came to me and let me know that they're deciding to retire. Maureen Stecker. She came in last week and said, you know what, it's time. It's time. 17 years serving four different superintendents, and that was enough to drive her into retirement. So I absolutely get it, but that was my own commentary. But just my sincere thanks, gratitude. Even during the interview process, Maureen was there reaching out to me, helping me. Get through all the pieces, and then every day since, she's been right there and helping guide, keep me out of potholes and everything else. But her retirement will take effect February 1st. But thank you. Thank you for me personally, and I know from the board's standpoint, thank you. You are amazing. So thank you. Thank you. The enrollment report, Lori touched base on it a little bit. You see the last, compared to the last month, and on the back side, you see the year-to-date from where we were last year. And Lori indicated last month we were up 21 students or so. Any questions on the enrollment report? All right. Immunization. So I'm required to read this.
Good enough.
What, I know Earlier today, I didn't have my glasses, so she was helping me out.
Actually, you could probably just turn that around.
Yeah, I know. Go to everybody. Everybody see that? You going back onto
the... Back to your enrollment. I think Joel pointed this out last time when we had a report where we wanted to follow the cohort class sizes down.
Yeah.
That's reflected in here?
No, but I will. I will. Thank you for bringing that up again. Yeah, I appreciate it. It wasn't forgotten, but thank you. So immunization report. The district is compliant and all health and immunization data was reported to the state in before the end of November 2014. So I did that.
So we're compliant.
We're compliant now because I read that out loud for some reason. That makes it all well. It's interesting. Just wanted to highlight Susie Smith from Ben Franklin. She wrote a blog post or blog. I don't know if it's a blog post. Here you go. It's just a nice way for her celebrating PBLs in her classroom. As I wrote back to her, and I think it's true, it gave people an opportunity to have a window into her classroom. To see the process, to see where it's been, where it's going, and how it's working for her personally. So I just wanted to share that with you. There was a nice piece that Kirk shared with us last week.
Should we post this somewhere?
We have.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
With that, I'm done. Off to you for
your update on the town hall.
Oh. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. At town hall last week, we had roughly 25 people show up. That was a really good conversation. An hour and a half. I spent the first 20, 25 minutes talking about the same presentation we had here for full-day kindergarten facilities. And then we had an hour basic open mic. I look, other superintendents look at me around the DuPage area and like, oh my goodness, it's amazing how much community engagement you guys are really doing. But I thought it was a fantastic opportunity to engage with people, have conversations, allow community members to ask us questions. First part of it really ranged from the kinder facilities, and then the next probably 45 minutes, it was open to any question after that. So I was really pleased with the turnout, pleased with the questions. Really thank my staff for being there and supporting us, and board members, appreciate you guys coming in and supporting. I thought it was just a really good night, and huge kudos to Erica for pushing us out there and really making these pieces come to life. This whole community engagement series, I think is a huge success, from the coffee and conversations that we've had to town halls to listening sessions. I'm really pleased with our efforts and our work going forward. So thank you for bringing that up. I appreciate it.
Just the next town hall meeting is March 3rd.
March 3rd?
March 3rd.
Yeah.
And have we picked a topic yet, or that we're still...
Yeah. They'll be to be determined.
It's March what?
It's
March 3rd.
March 4th.
Thank you.
Oh,
any community questions?
Oh, and Drew came to me with a couple of community questions. I'll get to those in January. I apologize to him. I know he asked me a little bit ago for them, so I'll make sure those that were asked of him will be reported out in January. Thank you, Drew. I appreciate that.
Were there any themes to the questions that
the facilities one? A little bit about kindergarten itself, about the facilities, how we're managing these facilities. What did an early childhood center? Where would that be? Some questions around Spalding, around the K-5, those pieces. Long-term projections of student enrollment from the Crisarda report. I think it's a Crisarda report. Looking at those pieces, those conversations were there on that facilities kinder piece. In that open conversation, had some finance questions, but had some multi-age questions and instructional questions In an hour, there were a wide variety of questions that were asked in that time.
Did you mention that there were some people who came who were older and didn't have kids in the district?
Yeah, we were really...
And that's a couple times now we've had that. It would be good to figure out a way to find out how they're learning about this and try to do more of whatever that is, because this is really a new voice that's showing up for these things now that they come to some learning sessions. Now the town hall would be good to get people who already have their kids through the district to want to know more about what's going on.
So we did ask one gentleman, Charles, I think it was Charles, a really great guy, and we asked him, how did you find out?
Yeah, that's right.
And he said it happened at the Daily Herald. I was like, totally, I went back to the Denver Post. I'm like, I don't think you're going to the Denver Post. So the Daily Herald.
So we need to keep our eye on that so we get to more of whatever's causing that, because that's a good thing.
I also think, I thought it was great that you had principal there, you had assistant principal, you had staff there. I think that was, very kudos to you.
Thank you.
It's obviously on their free time, and I appreciate it as a board member because they were helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. The team was fantastic, so thank you for recognizing that.
Okay. I know we talked a little bit about, how we're going to continue these and the community engagement and how we're going to measure the success of these. Any progress on them? Attendance could be one. Topics,
To me, I think it's about the engagement overall and for the listening. I think that's the most important thing, that we're there, we're listening, we're responding, we're answering questions to the best that we can. I think it's just about that conversation on the community engagement side of things. But, I'd love to see more people attend. We had some suggestions about the time. I think time's hard. I mean, Eric, for everybody, some people are 25 people, 6 o'clock work for. I don't know if 7:30, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock works for another 25 people. It doesn't work for those 25. I don't know. So we'll keep messing with that time.
Well, I think part of what we tried to do, too, is have them have things like you guys do your coffee on a Saturday. We do something during the week at night. It gives different options.
So the biggest piece I'd like to see is more people attending. That, to me, would be the number one issue.
All right. Sounds good. Any other questions? Okay, board reports.
Well, Patrick, do you want to talk about, since we're on this engagement piece, you want to talk about coffee?
Sure. We had our sessions two Saturdays ago.
29th, two Saturdays ago.
We got together. Eight, nine people showed up. Some people that we haven't seen before, which was good, and it was. I think the couple of the overarching themes that Eric and I heard were, of course, kindergarten, tax levy, but the one that personally I found most surprising was the thought that the board was this plateau of individuals, of untouchables kind of thing. That's the whole idea of these copies and these forms, is to kind of try to break that down and understand that, we're here, we're reachable, we try to engage all community members. We really tried to establish in that meeting the purpose of the board, opera balcony versus dance floor, things that we try to achieve as a board in terms of strategy and long-term and medium-term thinking, milestones and goals. And then some general one-on-one questions that we had with some parents about, some personal children issues that we said that we would try to get engaged with, but we have to be careful that, it's the administration's responsibility and the administration reports to the board and to the superintendent, but we'll do what we can to help facilitate and move that conversation along. But we got to be careful that we're not, seven principals. So I think it went very well. Everybody that I talked to, leaving, thanked us, appreciated us, want to have more of these. You know, maybe logistically, I think what we really tried to do is rather have it in a public forum that allow walkthroughs and people to stop through. Maybe not the best place at the Glen Oak, but, you know, it was our first staff. It's going to evolve. Thank you, Erica, for doing all your work to put that together. We really appreciate it. We had some takeaways. We may have signed up 8 new PTA members in, you know, community sessions. So I thought it was successful.
That's great.
For our first time around.
I do too. And I think to Patrick's point, I think the most interesting question for me was having somebody who is not, you know, doesn't attend the board meetings but wanted to come to this and ask the question, so what's the role of the board? And so it was good because it really level set some of the discussion around, you know, governance versus, you know, direct decision making. We're not the managers of the buildings and that type of thing. So I think that was helpful. And in fact, we got that feedback from one parent from Lincoln who talked about that. That was quite good. The other thing I want to highlight, and I try to do this even if I have, over the years, I think I've tried to do this to reach out and let people know. But we had some specific kudos around some teachers. Some were our PBL coaches. And the work that they're doing and engaging other teachers and really helping to, that is a tool for learning, to move that along. Teacher out of Churchill, I'm blanking now who that was that came up. I really wanted to be able to put this in the record. I believe it was Kelly King at Churchill. And then Lisa Buchholz at Lincoln, also identified as, very focused, helpful, engaging, just like Kelly at her level and her literacy. So it's nice to hear that, and I think really important for community members to be able to, to talk about that directly. The other takeaway that I would make is, and I know that we got, there's always questions around timing and all that other thing. I think the more that we do this, and I know we went back and forth, and I appreciated that other board members allowed us to kind of model this in this way. That it was, we got feedback that this was just nice and relaxed, there wasn't any protocol, it was really just really people having conversation and digging a little bit deeper, and I appreciated one participant's comment who said, kind of tongue-in-cheek, she said, well, you're here, you're on the spot, kind of laughed about that, and at the same thing said, I'm not sure I could do this, and so I think there was that balance of recognizing that it was a good opportunity, so I thought that was quite good. And kudos to Glen Oak for publicly for hosting us.
Yeah.
We were supposed to end at 10 o'clock. I think we only did like 10:45. So they were very gracious and wonderful about it. So I thought it was quite good. Look forward to getting another one on
that. I echo that. This needs to continue. Yeah. I think it was.
Do we have a date for the next one? Then?
We have not because we wanted to offer other board members to rotate in now, for that. There could be two other phases, who would be able to do that. So I know this is our last board meeting in December. When we come back in January, maybe, bring calendars and
okay.
Identify who might want to serve in that next one and kind of rotate voices, which would be great. I'm certainly happy to do it. I loved it.
It was great.
And I would do it again.
Yeah,
so
I would do it again.
I'm not precluding myself. Different points of views
and thoughts and...
Yeah.
So our next meeting, we'll come with calendars and discuss who the next tool.
Yeah.
Nice.
Venue.
Yeah, and I think
business
venue is perfect versus a school venue.
Yeah.
Seems to work.
Yeah.
And out of curiosity, the 9 people, were 7 of them new, 5 of them new?
I would say there were 3 that are, familiar and very involved, in terms of either PTA or coming to board meetings or, with children. But the other ones really new faces.
Great.
That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah. It was good. Yeah, I thought it was quite good.
All right, terrific. Anybody else?
I have a couple of things. We had Team 21 this last Thursday. I was out of town last Wednesday and Thursday, which is why Paul apologized. I couldn't be at the town hall. But I had written to Karen and to Kelly to see if I could call into Team 21 because we were doing some small group. And I just wanted to listen into it. Anyway, my meeting got expanded, and that will happen, so I didn't get to call in. However, I want to just share a couple of the things that Team 21, again, reminding of the purpose is that this is really the kind of the group that's thinking about
leadership in terms of research, making recommendations to continuous improvement. How do we keep looking at what we're doing and be tweaking it? It's like any other, it's systems thinking, you know, because you're constantly looking to try and address, improve, et cetera. So one of the things I want to mention, and this is a nice venue, a kind of segue for in terms of Susie's blog, and that is that a lot of conversation around, you know, what are teachers thinking? You know, we're talking at this meeting, and we hear this, I think, in most board meetings, is, you know, what is going on? And I sent an email to Paul based on the update that he sent us last week about our conversations around multi-age, wanting to bring that to the board in January, you know, the update. Team 21 is helping to, at the request of teachers, to put together a teacher-led professional learning and demonstration classroom model, which is what teachers have requested, to be doing more observation of different level teachers applying some of the different curriculum strategies. And I know that I've been beating this dead horse, but I think this really goes back to the very beginning of the conversation on for all districts, ours included, on 21st century learning guiding principles, and that is that there needs to be an alignment and not a siloing, either by building or by grade levels, and in our case, levels now. And so the more that we can do that, the better. So I was over at Forest Glen last week for one of the PBL panels for an hour, and had a chance to talk with one of the teachers who's also a rep on Team 21. And she spoke at some length about how there is both excitement and also nervousness about having people observe, which I think is natural. But Team 21, I think, is doing a really nice job of making sure that, and this started, Paul, with your and Karen's listening sessions, to be able to bring that data back. Team 21 is working on what those kind of learning guiding questions will be, and then the logistics of the classroom visits. And so they have some teachers, like in all opportunities like this, who step up right away, and others who said, I'm not ready to do this yet, but I will go observe. So I think in the end it's going to be a good balance. One of the outcomes of this is really looking at some of what we're talking about with the multi-age, which is how are teachers at a level 3 adopting some of the processes, what are we doing at level 2 in some of our classrooms, and being able to observe teachers applying the strategies and the methodologies that are there to support this work. So I'm excited about this because I think you know, we're not unique in the desire to have teachers who are doing quite good work wanting to be models for that. And the only way you can do that is to be able to get into the classrooms and do that. And the more we build that out, the stronger I think the system's going to be in terms of people observing each other, both for what's working well and for what's not working well. And I think that certainly is as important. So that's one of the big pieces of work that we're doing to go into January. So I want to share that. And the other thing, and this is just by happenstance, tonight I was on a call at 6 o'clock with my job on a webinar for 45 minutes. I could be on it. And it was a presentation by the new president of the graduate school that I work at. And this is the book that they we're reading as the book now for the school, Disrupting Class, which is the book we're using for Team 21. And one of the presentations that he made, he used to work at the University of Chicago Booth School, School of Business, B School, which is where you work, right? And he talked about this integrated thinking model where they're taking students, and have been doing this for a number of years now, but they're really fine-tuning it. And in the end, what he's talking about is 360-degree feedback for students coming into the B School program. And it starts with a cohort of 600 into 10 groups of 60 that are then broken down into groups of 7 to 8 to 9, all in terms of kind of a lockstep cohort through this first 8 weeks of school, so that they're aligned on group process, feedback, and then them being able to take that and put that into their learning. So, you know, I just think it was... the more I look at this and the more that we talk to teachers, which is why, Paul, I think, you know, as an individual voice, and I know that I wrote this to you as well, the more we can have teachers coming in at the beginning of the school year, say, at the beginning of the next calendar year, to say, here's what's working, here's where we're struggling, here's, you know, how we want to fix that, that I think that's good for the board to hear, because in answer to one of the questions tonight, it's not the board's decision, it's a curriculum decision, it's a management decision. And what you eventually bring to the board in terms of that is what, you know, we're going to want to have data around that. And I think that that's a helpful. So to see something like this, where she lays it out, all this is teachers talking. And I think that's critical. So I thought that, that was really interesting.
Yeah.
And the last thing is an update that we didn't get to do at our last board meeting, which is our conference, the Triple R conference. And I mean, we all, got to hear some good speakers, some update on governance, lots and lots and lots of legal stuff, which is probably a little bit overkill this year, but, I mean, important. But I went to one presentation that was quite good called Balancing Governance, the Local School Board's Role. And I would actually like to, I'm going to download this and put this on, because as we go into January with people, filing petitions for board positions, I talked to a board member in one of the other districts, and they're going to put some of the presentations on governance issues up on their website that I think would be really helpful. It's a great idea. So I'll look to do that, and I'll get that over to Maureen and Nancy, and are going to get up on our website. But this one really answered a very specific question. It was, what is the commitment to public education as we move forward, and the movement toward privatization and choice models? And it was a very broad-ranging discussion, because in this room was the president of a school board from Pawnee School District of 300 students total, up to a unit district that had, I think, it was similar to Glenbard West, just a high school district, but they had like 10,000 students, all talking about the same thing, which is the change in demographics, the knock on the door to public education, educating the whole child, every child that walks in the door. And you know, the question that we were left with to talk about and we discussed was the civic commitment to public education and the desire to recognize the ambassadorship of boards, but also the fiduciary responsibility of all stakeholders, including the kids, and making sure that those programs really support the whole child. So I thought that was interesting. I did attend District 87's presentation on our referendum. Although I attended some of the events, I never knew the process of it, so I have their PowerPoint, and it was very, very well done. And Jeannie Taylor, who was the Glenbard Dog parent who co-chaired, was there and presented as well, and she did a great job. And then I think the last thing was really just being able to sit in on some of the conversation about what's coming up with new governor. And I did want to share something out of the paper that I think caused me a little bit of the clunk, which is the Illinois State Board of Higher Education has been directed to present budgets that show a 20% cut in cost with the new leadership coming in. I don't know what that means for public education at our level, but I think it's important for us to take that as a kind of a standard setter. The article was quoted, this is bad budget news. So at the higher education level, which typically gets hit a little bit differently than we do, I think probably harder, but they've been able to present budgets that show a 20% cut. So I just share that, and that was a lot of the conversation I think we had at the conference too. So anyway, I'll share that. That was
if I could go right off, Matt, because we attended the same discussion that was called Turning the Corner for 2014 Election. And the former governor, Jim Edgar, and two professors from U of I spoke regarding what is that election? What do those results mean? They talked a little bit federally, but really focused on the state. And that, Erica's reference to the budget cut, is exactly one of the key takeaways for me.
Yeah.
Was you're seeing the sunsetting of the income tax, which personally is a great thing for all of us. But that's a lot of money. If it's $2 trillion, whatever, not trillion. I'm thinking federal.
Wow, that's up.
Yeah, I think it's $18 trillion. If you got that right. So $2 billion. So it's quite a lot. We're at 2.9 million of state funding. At some level, at least in my finance mind, I cannot grasp that if that's what we're less in receivables. That's less what we're going to receive in income as a state. Our 2.918 number has got to go down. I mean, everybody's got to feel a little of that pain. So, and that's what Jim Eggers spoke about. I think the professors were talking about how at the state school or university level, they've already seen the big cuts. So when you talk about a 20% cut at their level now, it has less of a meaning than it did 5 years ago. So that was a very, very important discussion to hear from, at least from my perspective, from the finance standpoint, where our budget is in the state of Illinois and how it impacts us, which it will, how we'll figure out and find out.
Mm-hmm. So, thank you.
That's one thing. And just from the last time we were here, we tabled our discussion of board reports. It's kind of just the PBL that I was on at Hadley with the 7th grade social studies. We all have a lot to say, so I'll make it quick on this because there's a lot of great takeaways seeing these you know 7th graders presenting to adults, which in itself is great. We've heard a lot of that about PBLs. But for me, one of the things I think is, you know, the research, the presentation, all that stuff, you know, the material, that's all great, and, you know, a lot of kids do that. But presenting, getting up, getting out there and shaking hands of these panelists, and then where do you put your hands when they're done? I mean, for a child to do that is great, because the more they do it, the better they're going to you can go with the collaboration and all those other, you know, great learning characteristics that we have, and they're all great. You can see it with these kids. But the fact that they're out in front, and, you know, for me, a lot of my critique on that, where they can improve, is that I realize they're only 7th graders, but they're doing it, you know, and they're doing it. Our 3rd graders or 2nd graders are doing it. So by the time they're in 7th grade, I mean, they're going to be fantastic, better than all of us. So it was a great experience for me, getting in there and seeing it, and I was just impressed. Thanks.
Thank you.
Anybody else want to report out on III? Any other conference or any session they went to they want to share?
Patrick did all of our resolution stuff.
Thanks for signing me up for that.
Yeah. What do you think is kind of interesting?
No, I'll put some notes together.
Great, thank you.
Okay. We do have
time. Anybody else attend a session? Any other PBLs you want to report on?
I did the open spaces one at Forest Glen. I know that's been around to the other schools. And my takeaway was I would really like to find some money to fund kind of a compilation of some of these ideas. And these kids came up with some brilliant ideas. And just the data that they collected in terms of what teachers wanted, students. So it'd be kind of interesting to see if we could find some project partners.
Well, that goes against the grain of having the business.
Well, no, I'm saying if you reach out to
them.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So to see if we can fund some of that.
Private money.
Good stuff.
How much money are you talking about?
Well, the budget they had was $32,000.
Oh, God.
To build.
Joe's out.
You almost had him.
That's an aggressive budget by the
way. Well, I liked mine because they asked the village to pay for it.
You're all in.
Well, I attended a music PBL, and I was very curious to see how that would play out.
No pun intended.
Sorry. This was at Lincoln, and it was 3rd graders. And one of the strongest things that I saw there was engaging other people from the community to get into the schools. And I know we've all seen this on these panels, but, you know, I feel connected there because of being on the school board, but some of these other people from the village, residents here, you know, they're not in a school in a kind of, you know, expert role. So for them to see what the teachers and students are doing, it's just great exposure for, you know, the whole learning process. Plus, I have a bias, as you all probably know, but the music was really fun. The students had to create something. It was all rhythm, they weren't singing, but still, they were so engaged, and the teacher did a great job with a project that they can replicate with their friends outside of the classroom. So, you know, it's taken on a life of its own. It's really wonderful.
That's great. Any other III stuff, or are we good with that?
Okay.
All right, terrific. All right, upcoming meetings, January 12th, 2015, will be the next regular board meeting, 7:30 p.m., Central Services Office, followed by and this is just another coincidence, January 26th, my mother's birthday, 2015.
Okay.
Regular board meeting at 7:30 p.m. in Central Services office. Other matters? Any other matters to come before the board? Anybody want to bring up anything else?
One quick thing. Remember that our rotations have changed for December. I know PTA meetings are every other month typically, but now we're rotating into our new structure. And I thought I brought it with me. If I find it, I'll share it. I know Maureen has sent that out to us, so maybe we can get a reminder on who's doing what when.
The activities list and assignments?
Yeah. She had that box.
I think that's
$12. And the other thing was, one other triple I thing, reminder of our mandatory training,
yep.
Especially with PARA and the fact that we have our MOU in place. Some of the mandatory board training was around PARA evaluation. I think most of us did that online. And then also Open Meetings Act, because we have that posted in on our website in terms of our board training. So just a reminder, that was kind of a message at the conference, too, to make sure we're on top of that.
Terrific. Thank you. Anybody else? No? Okay. We have a need to adjourn to closed session. The board has determined the need to adjourn to closed session to discuss collective negotiating matters between the district and its employees or their representatives or deliberations concerning salary schedules for one or more classes of employees. May I have a motion?
Motion.
I have a second. Terrific. And I don't think we'll have any action items out of it. So thank you, everyone, for joining us. Have a wonderful evening.
Roll call.
Oh, roll call. Yeah, sorry. Premature. Roll call.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mr. Jensen?
Yes.
Mrs. Wilkinson?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Aller?
Yes.
Mr. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes. Thank you, everyone. Have a nice evening.